Welcome to Talk Is Sheep, the official podcast of the Wild Sheep Society of British Columbia, brought to you by our title sponsor, Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. Come along with us as we take conversations that matter to you into the high alpine. We have partnered with Mountain Tough Fitness Lab to help get you in shape and mentally stronger. Whether you're a veteran hunter just starting out, the Mountain Tough app will take you to the next level. We personally train using the Mountain Tough programs, and we believe in it so much that we want to give you 6 weeks for free using code SHEEPBC. That's SHEEPBC. Check out Mountain Tough Fitness Lab. You won't be disappointed. This episode is sponsored by our conservation partner, Frontiersman Gear. Thank you, Sitka Gear and Frontiersman Gear, for investing in healthy wildlife and sustainable ecosystems. Well, ladies, it is an honor and a privilege to have you back on the podcast, Renee, and to welcome you, Kim, to the first one with us on Talk Is Sheep. So how's things with you ladies today?
Awesome. Thanks for having me back, Kyle.
Right. Yeah, thank you, Kyle, for having me. It was a Monday. Great day.
Oh, yeah. So your Monday wasn't as busy as mine. Here we are, right? It's the end of the day, and you're just getting into the podcasting mode here, Kim.
Right on.
Okay, so just to start off with, Renee, let's start with you. We're welcoming you back to the podcast. You've been on several times and an expert, I would say, on the podcasting. In fact, there's lots we got to talk about, actually. I don't know if we'll get even into that today, but the Hunt Fish podcast that Women Hunt and Wild Sheep Foundation was part of a sponsorship of. So that's really cool. And really, that's not why I just had that mini epiphany just now. But welcome back to the podcast. So for our listeners, Renee, just start off with a little bit about who you are, why you're here, and what you do.
Sure thing. Yeah. Great to be back. Thanks, Kyle. And I'm Renee Thornton. I am the founder and chair of Women Hunt, a program of the Wild Sheep Foundations. And essentially, my day job is a volunteer role for the foundation running this program. And I have a great, great community of women behind me and around me, of women who we've taken through our program and are now wonderful advocates of Women Hunt and the Sheep Foundation and the Sheep Resource. And we're all about creating opportunity and space for women who are curious or interested in entering the hunting and conservation worlds.
Awesome. Very cool. Well, welcome back. It's great to see you. And
thank you.
Kim, so welcome to the podcast. Let's start off with, first of all, where are you coming live to us from, Kim, and a little bit of who you are and what you do during your day job?
Right on. Coming live from Cody, Wyoming, and I am the VP of Operations and the Auction Director for Wild Sheep. Started this organization when I was a young girl at 20 years old, and here I am 36 years later, and that speaks for itself to me, tells you how much I love this organization. I love the people. I have met the most fantastic people that I have ever could have ever imagined in a career. People come and go in careers, and I've stayed for 36 years, and it's because of what I do and the people that I do it for, and that's conservation and sheep, and we work hard for it. So that's me in a nutshell, really.
Oh, awesome, Kim, and I guess I'd be remiss not to sort of recognize your commitment to the foundation and conservation of wild sheep. And I've known this, and I have that level of respect for you. And I know there's a tremendous amount of respect for you, but what was shocking to me and just how far your reach goes. So I got to run into you at the Guide Outfitters Association of British Columbia at their AGM in Kelowna last month. And so you were up there representing the foundation. I think it was your first time to UABC.
Yeah.
And our president, Gray Thornton, had introduced a few people, part of the team. I was there, you were there. And when they introduced you, it was incredible, the resounding applause from the crowd. There was 150 people that were cheering and yelling and clapping. And just a testament to your commitment to conservation and wild sheep and the respect you have in our community. So, well-deserved, in my opinion. And I was just you know, you the first time to Kelowna, the first time to the AGM, and everyone in that room was clapping and applauding you.
So. Yeah, they were a great crowd. I mean, I got to meet so many new people too. I know a lot of the people that were up there, and it was great to be with them on a one-on-one, not a convention crazy time. And I just hopped tables and visited with people and got to know a lot of people. And so it was a great show. I really enjoyed it and learned a lot up there on the challenges they have. So it was great.
Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. Fun event for sure. Okay. So we have a bit of a mission today. We're going to talk a little bit about Women Hunt. And of course, the May 1st deadline is, we're going to drop this probably right after the deadline for the Field to Fork Women Hunt new hunter program. So Renee, we're going to do a little bit of touch up on what's new with the program, what's going on there. And there's some exciting new stuff that's going on. So kind of give us a rundown of what's been happening with you. And let's talk a little bit about the window that's now open for anyone that's interested in attending the new hunter program, the Field to Fork program in Texas.
Yeah, thanks. So maybe just really briefly for maybe somebody who's tuning in for the first time, I'll keep this really brief. You know, our flagship course that we offer is the Field to Fork course that's delivered by the FTW SAM in the Hill Country of Texas. And we've partnered with them, and it's kind of a soup to nuts, 4.5 day, supercharged instructional where women, or anyone, frankly, but we tailor it for women, can take this course and learn rifle skills and hunting techniques and wild game preparation, field dressing, butchering, all of it, everything you might imagine to learn how to be a hunter. And so that opportunity, we offer it annually. It's an online application that's available on our website under the Wild Sheep Foundation's website. There's a section for Women Hunt. People can click there to apply. And the application period is going to be open again this year for the month of May. So on May 1st, we open the application period. It's open until May 31st. And then after it closes, the selection committee is going to start the hard work of going through hundreds of applications to choose 12 women from across Canada and the U.S. to participate. So I encourage anyone who's at all interested to throw your hat in. You never know, you might be chosen, and it's a life-changing opportunity. At least that's what every single woman who's gone through this course has told me, that it's life-changing. So, and I see it every time that they do. So it's really exciting. And you know, there's a couple of restrictions right now, the way we offer this course, that I need to mention. One of them is that you have to be a woman over the age of 21 years of age or older. And that's because we ask the women to come unaccompanied to the ranch. And because there's firearms, ammunition, and a bar on the ranch, you have to be the age of majority in the United States to attend. So, that's just in brief where we are with Field to Fork course. And just a reminder too for everybody that we have like three prongs to our offering. The first one is selecting the women and taking them on this once in a lifetime opportunity down at the ranch. And then when they come out of it, we set them up with a mentor by working with their local Wild Sheep Foundation chapter and affiliate. So they have some support when they come out. And then the third thing is all about giving back, which is a whole branch of Women Hunt that we're really proud of. And we're seeing exceptional efforts by, Kyle, you know, firsthand, the women in British Columbia, including Rebecca Peters, who created Women Shaping Conservation for the society. And so many others of the women are really doing tremendous things to give back within their local community, as well as to Women Hunt and the Wild Sheep Foundation. And the ripple effect that's happening from the actions of these women is really remarkable. We're talking about thousands of lives are being impacted now. It's really fantastic. So that's like the new and exciting thing for Field to Fork for all the people who are familiar with it or the ones just learning about it. Your chance to apply is right around the corner.
So let's talk a little bit about, for somebody that's considering it, that maybe is looking at the program, Renee, let's say they've done a little bit of hunting themselves, maybe they have a hunting license, maybe they've taken an animal, sort of, you know, you mentioned new hunter. Is it pretty restrictive, or is somebody that's kind of like green, but maybe not exactly a new hunter, maybe they've got a little experience, can they apply?
Yeah, so it is. Really, we're trying to focus on women who are either brand new or have limited experience. But anyone is welcome to apply with any level of experience. But we are trying to focus on people who haven't had the opportunity, who've had limited opportunity, but nobody should ever screen themselves out. You know, it's kind of like when you apply for a job, don't screen yourself out, let somebody else do that, right? So I wouldn't want to discourage anybody, you know, and the selection committee, we have an application process that has 7 questions and we modify them slightly every year. They're never quite the same. And, you know, you and I had talked about best practices or ways that women should approach that. And, you know, my best advice is to everybody who's considering applying is I've spoken to other women who've been selected and asked them what their strategies were, their approaches, why their applications stood out so much to us as when we were assessing them. And what I hear most often from them is that they speak from the heart. So I know that sounds a little bit corny, but really when you're reading the questions, my best advice to any of you applying is speak from your heart, be just really reflect and personalize it. You know, the one of the things that we really value is that vulnerability and voices when we're reading the responses. You know, anybody can Google what does hunting mean in relation to conservation and quote Teddy Roosevelt or somebody, right? But that's not what we're looking for. Maybe that you can use that as a source of inspiration if you're a little stuck or something, but we really want to hear your personal voice.
Cool. So for somebody that's applying, and I know you've been, you're not going to give us what your scoring rubric is. I know you've talked about the rubric before, but can you talk a little bit about, you know, is there a heavy emphasis on the conservation, the giving back? Is it about, you know, help me understand a little bit more about what's, you know, because I know a big part of the program that you guys offer is giving back and getting involved and being, you know, contributing to the system. So maybe touch a little bit on the importance of that and how much of that has to be shown in their application process, if you can.
Yeah, I mean, I can in general terms for sure. And actually, it's sort of like all of the above, and I know that's not being very helpful, but we really do ask questions that center around wildlife conservation. That's definitely a big part of it. You know, we're talking about ethics in hunting, people's feelings about what is ethical in hunting, that we're looking at that, we're measuring that. We want to hear personal stories about who's inspired them, why they're feeling inspired to learn to hunt or improve their hunting if they've already hunted. We ask them about previous hunting experiences if they've had them, and what that might have looked like. You know, but the conservation thing is certainly important, and we ask questions more than one around that, both in a kind of a global sense and a personal sense. And then the giving back is huge, and that's where we really challenge people to be as descriptive as possible of what that might look like if they were selected.
Very cool. Okay, and we've talked a little bit about, you know, the what you guys are looking at on previous podcasts, so I think for any ladies out there that are interested in maybe applying to the program, to listen to one of the previous podcasts. I think the most recent one we focused on Beyond Bonds. There wasn't a lot there, but certainly some of the earlier ones we talked about it. So, you know, we'll encourage you to go back to that. But there's a bunch of other new stuff. Of course, there's Beyond Bonds, which we have talked about. So we won't do a deep dive into that today. But also, I know now that you guys are offering a Women Hunt Industry Field to Fork program. So I think that's a fairly new program to the Women Hunt program. Can you talk a little bit about what that is and what's involved there?
Yeah, for sure. And I just like to add one thing. Another thing women can do who are interested in applying is reach out and talk to the existing Women Hunt community. And if you go to our Instagram page, you'll see lots of different posts over the last year or so of previous participants. Or if you go on our website, you'll see those people listed. And you can, if you know any of them, reach out to them and ask them to chat about it. I just want to add that as well. But yeah, the industry, the Women Hunt Industry Field to Fork is a new thing we're trying out. We're going to be trying out a bunch of different things here in the coming months and the next year or so. And we're starting with this. It's really exciting. And, you know, it actually came from this concept of the number of women who work in the hunting and conservation realms who actually don't hunt but might might like to try to do that. And so we're delivering for the first time here in the month of May an opportunity for women who work in the industry to attend the Field to Fork course. This does look different than what we've just described, Kyle, because, you know, the classic offering that we just went through, that's a free opportunity for the women who are chosen. All they have to do is get down to San Antonio, and the rest is covered by our very generous sponsors and donors. For the industry opportunity, this is a paid opportunity. So the women who are coming on the course are either paying for it themselves or their employers are paying for it. And but the key here is that they are somehow tied into the industry, whether they're volunteering or in a paid position. They are tied into the hunting and conservation world, but don't themselves hunt or have very limited hunting experience. So in all of the respects, it's the same. It's just not a competitive process. It's a paid process.
So talk a little bit about the importance of this program versus the Women Hunt Proper, like the sponsorship program. But how important is this and what are some of the goals that you're hoping to see from this, Renee?
Yeah, well, for the participants, you know, when I think there's a few things. One, it gives women who are working in the industry an opportunity to network with other women who work within the industry. And as we continue to offer this moving forward, that means possibly business opportunities. You know, if they have a chance to connect with somebody from a market they haven't tapped into yet. So there's some built-in positives there. As well, you know, what I've heard from these women who are attending and others who are interested but weren't able to make these dates work is that even though they work within the industry, and, you know, I'm not going to speak for Kim, she'll have her own voice here, but I'm just paraphrasing in general what I've been hearing. Even though they work in the industry and they're surrounded, you know, by hunters and hunting and wildlife conservation concepts that are related to hunting, you know, they either have never hunted or limited hunting. And for them, some of them, there's kind of a gap, you know, in understanding the full circle and spectrum of a hunter's motivations and what it feels like to hunt, what it feels like to harvest an animal and process it and cook it and eat it, of their own animal, I mean. So for them, it seems anyway, what I'm hearing is it's super exciting that they're going to have an opportunity to either learn or improve their skills so that at the end of the day, they can better relate to their client group.
Oh, that's super cool. I'm going to transition to Kim here now. Kim, it's my understanding that you're taking this course as well, and I find it interesting that you've worked for a hunting organization for 36 years. You've made these tremendous relationships, but you yourself are not an overly experienced hunter. I think you've done a little bit in the past. So can you talk a little bit about your journey and what you're hoping to get out of the program this next week?
Yeah, so, you know, I was raised here in Cody, Wyoming, and of course, this is a big hunting community. My father was a big hunter. My brothers hunted with him. But just growing up, my dad was like, that's no place for a girl. And that's just the way it was back then. And I started working at Wild Sheep when I was 20 and seeing all these hunters, and my dad had taken his sheep. And you know, I just worked it. I wasn't really thinking about the hunting. I wasn't in a relationship with a hunter. And so it wasn't really until I met my boyfriend here that he took me antelope hunting, and Justin Phillips took me on my second one, or my first one, actually. But like I told Renee, when this program really was in its infancy, she had asked me my opinion on what I felt about it. And I said, I think it's fabulous because myself, it really wasn't about the hunting that I was so afraid of. It was about the firearm. I didn't have a fear of, you know, hunting or not. I guess you do sometimes have a fear of not killing the animal with your first shot and, you know, that kind of a fear. But it was really not understanding a firearm and not being trained on anything. And so when this presented itself, Greg had talked to me, and my daughter Emma was working with us just a little part-time position that she got to experience mom's job and figured out real quick that it wasn't as easy as I make it look for her. But Greg told me they were going to do this Field to Fork. And I said, I'd love to do this. And he was just, you bet, you know, Kimmy, you need to experience this, because he knew that I was not afraid of the firearm. I just don't have a lot of experience with it. So I'm really excited to be part of learning my firearm, the Tourette's, all the things that are all part of the gun that I don't really know about. I don't know much about them. So to me, this is more for me to learn about my gun more than it is anything. So I'm really excited about it.
Very cool, Kim. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, being a young woman and interested in hunting, and then, you know, the sort of the classic narrative, like, oh, girls don't hunt and they don't shoot or they don't do that sort of thing. And then that sort of that, you know, coming to that understanding that, okay, under my dad's, I guess, watch, I'm not going to be doing this. And then coming to the foundation. And then obviously at some point there's amazing women hunters in our community, right? There have been for over the years. It's not that this isn't just, you know, new to the foundation. For years, there's been incredible hunters and the list is long and distinguished. You know, at some point did you go, whoa, they're doing it? Did that feel some motivation, or, you know, sort of what was that transition like where you went like, no, I really need to do this? Was it when you met your new guy, your boyfriend and the guy in your life, is that when you really wanted, or was it sort of along the way earlier on?
Well, it was earlier on actually. You know, I watched Renee Snyder's and the Pamela Atwood's and all those women that were hunting, that were out there just hunting, and Barbara Sackman's. And I've watched them come across my plate because I was always on the awards. And so here all these women were coming across my plate and I was like, wow, these ladies know what they're doing, you know. And then, you know, Justin came on board, and Justin Phillips is kind of the guy that, you know, he likes to push you onto things that you may not feel comfortable in. And he was like, come on, let's go. And Becky Lane at the time, and I and Justin all drew antelope tags and off we went. And that's just really how it started. There was no real passion for me at the time. It was just a friend that was saying, you've got to try this. You will enjoy going hunting. And I absolutely did. I did. I absolutely loved the hunt. And I harvested a nice little antelope buck. And, but you know, I just never, you know, you get busy in your own little world of wild sheep, and you don't think about, you know, everybody else is out hunting and you're out typing away, getting everything ready for that convention. So it wasn't really a big push for me to be a hunter. But I did enjoy it. And then I did take my second antelope with Patrick, my sweetheart. And that was awesome because I got that with one shot, and that animal ran and it stopped and he said, you got it, you got it. And it did this kick and flip and flopped on the ground. And I was like, oh my gosh, I felt very power in my own power. You know, I was very excited. I cried, all those emotions that you get when you harvest an animal. And, but I had a mishap also during that hunt, and it was a misfire. And I'm going to be truthful. That's what scared me. That's where my brain goes back to, I want to learn more about this gun, more about my safety, more about relaxing with a gun in my hand and not being in a rush and, you know, having to really hurry. I want to know that I'm on a safety. I want to know that I'm not in a rush and that I've got everything straight with my rifle and my firearm before I even think about harvesting an animal. And so that's kind of my journey. I, to be honest, had a scare with a misfire, and he laughed. I didn't think it was funny, because it was scary to me. And what if he would have been in front of it, you know, all those things, you would have it. And so my journey is just to really, learn. I want to learn about the guns, and I want to learn about how to relax and stay calm and do that breathing and be taught all those important pre-steps before pulling a trigger.
You know, Kyle,
awesome.
Sorry, Kyle, if you don't mind. Yeah. I was just going to say, this is such a common theme that, you know, we hear from all women across the board, is that one of their biggest barriers, almost always their biggest barrier, is that fear of the firearm, the uncertainty or the awkwardness or the being uncomfortable. And Linda Demmer, who serves on our committee, she lives in the eastern United States and is heavily involved with NWTF and Teddy Roosevelt Foundation and others, but she does some firearms training at one of her ranches, and she's always saying that you get a woman comfortable with her firearm, it's the first key and the rest follows. And Kimmy's just evidence of that.
Yeah. And the one thing I've heard, I'd be curious to hear your perspective, Renee, because I know you've done the FTW SAM course several times. Just as a public citizen, nothing to do with the foundation or anything.
Right.
That I think that's what led you to the FTW, is that relationship. I've heard so many times that women tend to be more disciplined, better shooters, better at those skills once they sort of get the training and the confidence. Has that been your experience, or just provide a little perspective on that for me?
Sure. But it's really anecdotal because I'm not an instructor, but this is what I hear from the instructors themselves at the ranch and other instructors that I've had training from over the years, is exactly that. That's what they say, is that what they like, what I've heard them credit the difference to, is that they, a little mixed here, a little mixed bag. Some instructors say that women's egos are not as pronounced as men's. And what they mean by that is there's less of a need for making sure you're right from the beginning, or doing it correctly right from the beginning. I've also heard them say that women tend to listen a little more attentively. So they will follow their instruction to the letter. So if the instructor says, do this, 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 and this, a woman will do this, 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 and this. And I guess apparently men will sometimes skip around a little bit, or they just want to shoot and they're a little more impatient. But again, that's only what I've just heard instructors share with me.
Okay, very cool.
Yeah.
Kim, can you touch a little bit about, I guess, this ecosystem, if you will, like, you know, Renee's platform, she's allowed this, you know, these women to come together. Does that give you a level of comfort where you're like, okay, like I'm in, you know, I'm not maybe less intimidated because there's not men in the chorus? And it, certainly hunting in general is dominated by men. Like, the stats don't lie. Of course, like, we have this growing demographic of women in hunting, but, you know, traditionally, if you walked into a fish and game club, it's going to be 90 or 95 or 100% men traditionally. Does it give you more comfort knowing that you're going to this program? I know there's male instructors, but having this ecosystem of women where you're learning together?
Absolutely. I think that knowing that all the women that I'm going with, and I know them all, they're all in the same boat as I'm in. I've already spoken to them, and we're all really excited to learn together and to share when we're done with our first day, and to share with our second, all the way to the end of our journey at this thing. So, you know, I don't have a fear of having a man there. I think that they're going to be awesome instructors. Obviously, they're top notch there. But having women there with me, in the same level of learning, that they're all just rookies, just like me. I'm the biggest rookie there is. I'm really excited just to be with them and learn right beside them and share what I've learned, and they're gonna learn something different from me, or from their experience that they can teach me. So to me, it's going to be really cool to have those ladies beside me in a women's situation. Yeah.
Awesome. Now, Kim, with regards to the, where was I going with this? I got to write down this time so I can edit my own stuff. There's so many questions I have for you. So you talked about the hunting aspect of it, the actual firearm aspect of it, and that sort of that nervousness. And you know, you talked about the misfire. Obviously, the Field to Fork course is all encompassing. It talks about tracking in the interest of full transparency, Melanie, my wife, is attending the course, so I have to admit there's a degree of envy or jealousy is not that I'm really happy for it, but envious because I've never had that level of training. And, you know, I'm a lifelong hunter. I've grown up from the youngest age, but I've never had that incredible training that she's going to receive. And I know absolutely for certain that Melanie will come back from that course and she will be a better shot than I will without, there's zero debate on that in my mind that she's going to be phenomenal. But it's much broader than that. There's, you know, the field dressing and everything. So you talked about your experience with Justin and sort of his, I guess, mentoring and then Patrick as well. But would you feel comfortable going out in the field tomorrow and gutting a deer? Let's say you were successful. And how important is these extra aspects? I know you really focused in on the gun care and sort of being comfortable, but talk a little bit about all these other things that hunting is so incredibly difficult. It just is. It's Melanie was just recently doing her core and she was talking about how difficult the exam was and the training was. And I'm like, that's the easiest thing you're ever going to do. Like as soon as you get in the field, that's when it gets really hard. So Kim, if you could just touch a little bit on, you know, are these other things important to you or really, are you really keen just to dig in on the firearm side of it?
Well, they're very important to me because I like wild game and I want to know when I'm processing my animal that I harvest or an animal that I'm on a hunt with, that animal is processed the way that we like it being done. And Justin was a huge teacher on this as well, because he didn't just, you know, take me hunting. We killed an animal and he just, you know, did everything. He showed me from start to finish and had me carry that animal out. And as far as I could anyway, he did most of it, but it's very important to me because, when you take an animal's life, you know, you have all kinds of emotions. At least I did a lot of emotions. Women are, we're giving life. We don't generally take life. So, we have a bit of that sorrow that comes into us. And I'm sure that men do too, because, we're all human beings. And, but it's important to me that the animal is processed perfectly, because I want to eat that animal and I want to say, I'm going to eat you. I promise. I told the animal my first one, I promise I'll eat you, because I'm petting it. But it's because, I did hunt it for food. I was hunting. I was a single mom at the time and I had my Emma and I wanted to provide some meat in the freezer and I did just that. So that meant a lot to me as well. So.
Very cool. How does your, have you had any feedback from your family on this, that they're like, okay, you know, Kim's doing this course and it's like a pretty, like it's a week long, it's pretty serious. Have you had any feedback on, from any of your family on your level of involvement in that?
Just that they're really excited for me. My twin brother texted me today and he was like, man, you're going where? He's really excited for me because of course he was raised hunting and he's been hunting and I haven't much, twice, I guess. And so he's really excited. Patrick's very excited for me as well. Jealous is too, you know, or envious as you say. Yeah, they're very happy for me. They know that I've worked here for a long time, obviously, and they're like, it's, you know, this is good. This is good training for you, and good on Wild Sheep Foundation for providing this opportunity for you to really learn and experience something that you're actually doing, and you know, in the hunting world, the conservation world. And so, yeah, they're really excited for me.
Well, I've heard Gray talk about it before, and I have to think that this is going to make your job easier, right? It's more relatable for you in terms of what you're doing. It's interesting. I guess the irony isn't lost on me that you're dealing with these world-class hunters. They're award-winning hunters through the awards program. You're giving them these amazing awards every year with the best hunters in the world. And you yourself really were certainly not an experienced hunter. So I would imagine in some capacity, this is going to make your life a little bit easier in terms of doing your job.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I'm no longer in those awards, but all the years that I was in the awards part, this is going to just bring it all back together for me. And I remember talking to one of my members and saying, you know, I have this neck injury and the gun just hits me. And he's like, put a muzzle brake on it. I hunt everything with a muzzle brake. And he's one of our biggest hunters out there. And I put a muzzle brake on it and shot it. And it was I have a Kimber 6.5 and it's beautiful. It was awesome. So that was just something that he taught me. And And I thought, oh, he's probably out there with a big old gun and boom. But no, he's got a muzzle brake on it. He's like, I don't even like to get hit either. So, it, you know, you learn experience through people as well. But yeah, this is going to be a great experience.
I love to hear. Can't wait to hear about it.
Kimmy, I was just going to say, I use muzzle brakes on my firearms too. And, you know, it's great for the shooter. As far as recoil goes, it's harder on your ears. Yeah. there's always a give and take, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So Renee, we touched a little bit on this women aspect of it. And so, you know, let's dive into that a little bit. What are the benefits? Why isn't people hunt? Like why women specifically? And sort of, you know, how important is that to create this environment where, you know, we talked about walking into the fish and game club, but it's 99% or 100% men, or the scenario where you're learning with peers and a bunch of men and are in a group and then there's one woman. So, you know, how important is that sort of environment that you're creating through Women Hunt to the program? Talk a little bit about that, if you don't
mind. Yeah, yeah, sure. And, you know, I think what's kind of important to realize is that I think it's tough for anybody who wants to learn how to hunt, you know, whether you're a woman or a man. And I don't discount the challenges that a man would face as well. But there are some things that are a little bit unique and different for women in that environment. And while, you know, not all women need a community of women or even want a community of women, regardless of if it's hunting or anything else. But there are a lot of women who do value that. And that's why Women Hunt was created, was just to provide that community for the women who want that. And we can see by our year over year, you know, growing momentum, the number of people who have interest in the program, if you're counting metrics on, you know, social media, or if you're looking at other more tangible things, the growth is huge and their interest is there. And so I just wanted to say that because it's not about exclusivity or you know, banning somebody or not being inclusive of somebody. It's just providing a community for women who desire being within a group of other women, not to the exclusion of others. And Kyle, we've talked about this many times on previous podcasts about how valuable men are to me personally on my journey. All my hunting mentors have been men. So it's not about excluding men. And I like to be really clear about that. But that being said, a lot of women like to be surrounded by other women. So that's what we provide. And, you know, a little bit more philosophically, also, I'll just say that, you know, I think I'm not the only one who's troubled by the ever-increasing pressures that the hunting community faces from an anti-hunting or non-hunting factions. And they're really ramping up. You know, if we look at what's happening in Colorado right now, or Oregon and other locations across the U.S. and Canada, it's a real and present danger, not to be too dramatic here, but it is. It's a real concern. And I just think that if we can create community where we have a growing demographic of hunters who bring different voices, experiences, context, emotions to the table, that's only going to benefit all hunters in the long term. You know, the more women we bring into hunting, the more children we bring. I maintain that women bring their children to activities. I'd love to hear what Kimmy has to say about this later as well as a mom. But, you know, and then the other thing I think about too is the more women we can bring into hunting. And when I say that, by the way, I don't even mean becoming an active hunter. You know, we have lots of women within the Women Hunt community who have joined, you know, in our social media or come to our seminars at the Sheep Show, or visit us at our booths at the Wildlife Society, where we touch wildlife professionals, or at the Sheep Show or other trade conventions. And they're not even hunters, but they're pro hunting, or they support hunting, or they understand the role of hunting with conservation. So when I say bringing women into hunting, I mean even those who don't actively hunt, but support it. The more women we can bring in, not only will they bring their kids and grow that demographic and bring that fresh new voice to the conversation, but they also will be casting votes at election time. And, you know, like I mentioned, there's so many measures right now at play in the United States in different locations. Not really sure up to speed with what's happening in the provinces, the different provinces in Canada, Kyle, but down here it's ramping up big time. So if you have those women voting for the position that's in the pro column for hunting, that's where we really see impacts. I know it's not sexy. You know, people don't want to talk about legislation. They don't want to talk about going to the ballot box. But that's where decisions get made.
Yeah, no, well said. And you know, the one thing that my experience with women hunting, it's very limited. I'll be the first to admit that. But, you know, when we went to the Beyond Bonds, the debut, or that's not the word I'm looking for. But
premiere.
In the premiere, thank you, at Sheep Week, room was filled. And it wasn't filled with just women. There was a lot of men there. Beyond Bonds, when we watched the film, there were kind of two central characters in you and Rebecca, but there was Colin and there was Gray and there was a lot of men in that film. So this really, it's an ecosystem, right? It's not, and when, you know, women in industry, you know, I went to your women in industry talks. When I go to Women Shaping Conservation, it's not, and in fact, I know Rebecca's been pretty deliberate that this is not just for women. Yeah, of course, it's to create awareness for women and opportunity for women, but it's not exclusionary for sure. It's a very inclusive environment. And, you know, you've talked about it, about the role that Grace played in mentoring you, right? How important it was at FTW, you know, your instructors, they're not women instructors. They're probably, is there any women instructors that, I'm just curious, actually.
Actually, there aren't. No.
Yeah. So, yeah, I, you know, I think that that's sort of a myth we can bust pretty readily. Yes, I get it for the 12 for sure, but not exclusively. Yeah. So.
Right. And I just wanted to add, sorry, it was kind of, there are no female instructors at the ranch, and that might actually be a reflection possibly of the fact that their instructors are all retired special forces, military, and that's another demographic that's primarily male. So that probably is a part of the reason why, I would suspect.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'd like to just add too, from what I see in my job, I see all these young people coming up, all these young women hunting, and they're all hunting with their husbands and their boyfriends. My daughter's learning now how to hunt. Her boyfriend wants her to learn how to hunt. It's something that they do together. And then they start having children and they start bringing their children into that, you know, realm. And I think it's just such a great outdoor thing for couples to go out and hunt together. And I think that it's making a really strong bond with husbands and wives and girlfriends and boyfriends. And they're involving, you know, back when I was growing up, the boys went hunting. The girls stayed home and the boys went hunting. And even some relationships nowadays, the guys go hunting and the girls stay home. And now the women are joining and they're going hunting with them. And I think that's a really important, aspect of this whole women hunt too, is when this woman feels comfortable and she's learning, that man she's got in her life that maybe already hunting or maybe he's not, they're going to start doing it together. And I think that's a really neat thing to watch people grow in.
Yeah. Okay. If I could just add, Kyle, you know, the applications we receive hundreds now every year, and, you know, motivations range, but we see some commonalities, and there's definitely a percentage of women who apply for our opportunity whose motivation is about learning to hunt so that they can hunt with their husbands or their sons or both, because they've never been a part of that and they want to start being a part of it. And then also, you know, what's interesting is like the film Beyond Bonds explores this concept of women hunting together, which is also super powerful. And, you know, that it's a different experience, and a powerful one. And I think there is a portion of women who love to hunt with their husbands or their sons or their uncles or whatever it is, for sure. And then there's a portion who are so jacked about getting out there with other women, and it's a whole other type of experience.
Yeah, well said. There's a couple things, Renee, I want to explore. First of all, let's talk a little bit about food security and COVID. So we know Women's the fastest growing demographic in the hunting space. That's pretty well proven. And it has been for quite some time. That's not new. How important was it during COVID and sort of people were like, there's no freaking meat on the shelves. There's no food. How much did COVID and food security play into sort of revive, I guess, for women in general, from your perspective? And I know that the Field of Fork program's fairly new. Is this going into your fourth year now?
Or your fourth third year.
Fourth year.
They delivered it the first time, Kyle, in 2021. Yeah.
Okay. So post COVID, but just, you know, from your, you had the women hunt program up and going well before that. So did you see any evolution during COVID with regards to maybe food security and women saying, and I've got a personal experience on that, but I want to hear your experience on it as the chair of the initiative.
Yeah, for sure. I would say the preponderance of women who apply, it's about food security. And they don't necessarily talk about COVID, although some do. But the majority of them talk about food security in the sense of organic meat, an animal that's lived freely, and also touches on being making sure that freezer's full even when meat's not available through the traditional markets, which speaks to COVID. And I know, like, for me, sometimes that line gets blurred because I joined this. My journey started in 2017. So between 2017 and 2024, I can tell you that, I mean, it's anecdotal. I don't have hard data, but the number of women on the landscape has exploded. And I always talk about this, the first time I ever went to the Wild Sheep Foundation Alberta banquet on the Friday night social, and there were six or seven women in the room of a room of 300 guys. And I was one of them as a brand new hunter. And then you go there now and half the room on their Friday night social is women, right? That's just one little tiny example. But I think that COVID played a huge role. Even though I know that line for me gets blurred, I don't really know where the COVID impact starts and where just the natural progression of women growth in hunting starts, but or ends or blends. But for sure, at least I can say here in Montana, that the COVID was a real impact to the number of hunters out on the landscape. It's no, without question, you can see the pressure everywhere.
Yeah, interesting. And my experience with that is there's a professional that I work with, this lady, and, you know, I would say, I'm not sure her age, I would guess 40-ish. And she was doing her, she'd done her firearms license, and she was going to do her core. And it was all motivated by, you know, sort of that post-COVID, like, you know, there was no food on the shelves. It's just like, hey, I need to be, I think she was, she was certainly not married. I don't know if she had a guy in her life, but she's like, I need to look after myself. I need to be able to go out and source my own food and be able to feed myself. And I don't have the confidence that in this modern system that it's always going to be available to us. And I think that was a wake-up call for a lot of people. So yeah, there was this, you know, she was in Victoria, and it was interesting listening to her story. And she's like, I don't know anyone. I think she said she was a single woman, and she's like, I don't know how to do any of this stuff. So she just started phoning people, and she did her firearms license. And I think the next step was her core. And I kind of directed her to the local fish and game club and said, that's a great place for you to start. But it was all very intimidating for her too. Even she said, you know, her instructor was an, ex-retired military RCMP, and it was all men in her course, and then she didn't really feel like in Victoria there was an ecosystem to support her there. And I think maybe going to the fish and game club, it maybe would change a bit for her, but she was living right in downtown Victoria, not a super great environment for a hunting female. Right. It's just not the place right. Where if you're going to learn to go hunt, that's not the place you'd start. Right. So, you know, I never really spoke to her after that, but, you know, I was always wondering, but I was just thinking the barriers to entry for someone like that, right. It would be, it'd be intimidating, challenging. You don't have a very inclusive environment for where she was. And I always kind of wondered where she ended up. I think she was pretty motivated with it. I suspect that she probably did end up following through, but, it's really interesting to see that.
And, you know, that's super common, what you just described with this woman in Victoria. And I certainly had that experience too. You know, when I made that decision back in 2017, there were no other women in my PAL classes. There were, you know, no other women in my hunter education. It was what it was, right? And so you do have to be, you know, and that's another thing about when we were talking about earlier about why women hunt, why not person hunt. And it's, you know, it's just another example of, you know, some women, just it can be a major hurdle to overcome that. And not all of us are as tenacious as another person, right? And you might just need a little bit more support, and that's okay.
Yeah, very cool. So the Women Hunt program, the applications are opening up here May 1st. We got 30 days. You're going to select 12 people. And so, and that's going to happen this fall. Your course is October, right? In Texas, is that correct?
It's in November this year. We've pushed the dates out a little bit. It's going to be November 8th to 13th.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. And what else is on the agenda? What do you got else for the program? What kind of other stuff are you working on? I know you've always got something in the background going on, so.
Yeah. So a couple other exciting things we're working on is kind of in the vein of the industry approach, where I mentioned earlier that it's a paid approach, right? Not a sponsored. We're also exploring doing a pure paid Women Hunt Field to Fork. That was an idea that came from some of the members of the Wild Sheep Foundation. Some of the female members approached me and said, you know, I've got the money to just pay to do this, but I really like the idea of doing this with a group of women. Would you consider doing a paid opportunity for women? And I think that's a stellar idea. Why not, right? Not everybody wants to compete, and if you have the means, then, you know, good for you, right? So we're going to be developing paid opportunities. We are going to start looking into creating a scholarship program. I don't know yet what that's going to look like. I don't know anything about criteria or who it's designed for. It's an early idea, and we have a couple of committee members who are going to work on that. So scholarships are going to be coming. And then for any of you who were at the Sheep Show this year in January in Reno, you would know this, but for those who weren't in the room Saturday night at the banquet, I'll just share a little bit about a new dedicated fund within Women Hunt. And it's in the memory of Ruby Mayflower Blake, who was the wife of Derek Blake. Both, Derek is still a member of the foundation and well-known, and Ruby was a beloved member of the foundation and part of our community, so bright and vivacious and funny, and anybody who knew her loved her. And for those who did, she died suddenly last year. She and Derek had only been married a short time. They have a baby daughter. Her name is Harbor. She was only a few months old when Ruby passed. And Ruby is a survivor of trauma from a previous marriage with domestic violence. And she had, you know, tried traditional methods for healing that, you know, helped her, but didn't really quite get her there. And then when she met Derek, he got her into hunting in the outdoors and introduced her to the sheep community. And that connection to hunting and being outdoors, and she loved her wild sheep family, brought her lots of healing and was kind of a game changer. And Derek approached Gray and I and asked if the foundation and Women Hunt would work with him to honor her memory. And so what we did is we've created the Ruby Mayflower Blake Legacy Fund. And it is a separate protected fund within Women Hunt. Derek is a commercial fisherman in Alaska, and he's also an outfitter. And he donated a hunt that went up for auction Saturday night with the proceeds going to this fund. And between, you know, that auction item and some private donors who stepped up and donated money, we have a nice sum in the bank now for this memorial fund in Ruby's memory. And Derek has struck a committee. It's a great committee, actually. He wanted himself and myself to be on it, but he also chose Jana Waller, Julie McQueen, and Brittany Boddington. And the five of us are currently developing the criteria for selection and a platform for applications. But, you know, for anybody listening, you know, we'll see how it evolves. But, you know, we're just doing everything we can to help Derek meet his vision, which is to provide opportunities in the outdoors and hunting for women who've survived traumas, whatever that might look like, and however that may roll out, we'll see. But we are so honored that he approached us and asked us to work with him to honor Ruby this way, and we're really excited to see where this may go. So that's another really big piece that we're working on that's super fun and energizing. And then you had mentioned near the beginning of our chat, Kyle, the Hunt Fish Podcast Summit. There's another new piece of business, the Western Hunt Fest. So the Hunt Fish Podcast Summit is run annually in March at the Warren Ranch in Texas. And Gray and I were invited as guests 2 years ago. Didn't know what we were getting into, but it's a really interesting concept. They bring together a number of podcasters and they bring together a bunch of guests. It's all focused on hunting and fishing, just like the title suggests, and conservation. What's great about for the podcasters, they get a chance to, in this period of 3 days, get a whole bunch of podcasts in their back pocket. So basically lots of content opportunity, content creation. And then for the guests who get invited, it's a great opportunity to get your message out to all sorts of different markets and some pretty untraditional ones. You know, I was invited back this year, and you know, whether it was 2 years ago or this year, sometimes you're talking to podcasters who are focused on fishing, but they're super interested in learning about wild sheep and women hunt, right? So and you know that your story is being heard by this entirely non-traditional audience. So it's great for getting messages out there. But the Hunt Fish Podcast Summit is now something that Wild Sheep Foundation and Women Hunt are sponsors of, and that's great too. We love supporting. It's such a great event. And it's super fun. You know, they always do something, like whether you're doing five stand shooting for some fun or a fishing tournament for some fun. And you just get to meet a whole bunch of really different people. And they always do a crawfish boil, which if, you know, I had my first one when I went there 2 years ago, I'd never even heard of that, let alone tried it. So there's always fun things to do, but it's a great, great event. And then the Western Hunt Fest is a newer, archery challenge competition. This is their third year. The founders, there's three of them. They're based out of Colorado, and they tailor their archery challenge to mountain hunting approach. So their courses involve elevation and, you know, loose rock and all sorts of, you know, challenges that simulate a hunting mountain hunt, and also they do two different, you know, course challenges. They do a pack out challenge because they really believe that you should be able to pack out what you take, you know. So it's amazing the weight that folks throw on and run these courses carrying that weight. It's crazy. But then they do a sprint challenge, which is a whole other thing. But it's really fun and it's different. They have elk calling competitions, vendors there, all sorts of things like that. So this is our first year partnering with them. That was a fun story, actually. It was a Women Hunt connection that brought Western Hunt Fest to the table. It was April Elwell from the class of 2021, who lives in Reno, and her husband Teddy sits on the board of directors for the Silver Arrow Bowman Club out of Reno, and they decided to host the Western Hunt Fest in Reno at their club this year, and learned that last year the guys, the three co-founders from Colorado, got some feedback from the women who were showing up that they wish there was some more courses tailored for, you know, a women's competition, basically, and they listened. And so April called me up and said, so, you know, Teddy's group is going to be hosting these guys and here's what they're about. And I thought it'd be great to have a women hunt booth there. And I said, that sounds like a great idea. Let's get a call with these guys. So she and Teddy set up a call with the founders, and I had a call with them, and I said, this is great. Let's do a booth. April, you're in charge, set the booth up, run the booth. It's your show. And I was briefing Gray about it, and he said, I'd like to talk to these guys. So he got on a call with them and decided that this was a great organization with really, really similar motivations. and values to the foundation. And I know I'm speaking for Gray right now, but give me a little bit of latitude here. I'm paraphrasing, but and so the Wild Sheep Foundation is the title sponsor of Western Hunt Fest, and Women Hunt is the sponsor for the women's event. So we're really happy to be partnering with them. I went to their first event of the season in Raton, New Mexico, April 13th, 14th, and I got to see firsthand, you know, what their event is like. It's really great, and the type of people that are attracted to it, really great community, and it's just another really fun, non-traditional market for us to be tapping into and getting our message out.
Very cool. The key takeaway for me that stands out is that there's demand for more women opportunities, right? So, you know, there's a need out there. People want more opportunities for women to be involved, and people are reaching out to you looking for your input to provide more opportunity, which is really cool. I think that speaks a lot for the program and the need for these programs. And then interesting, I'll just throw this out there that anyone that's interested, Western Hunt Fest, Gray hosts them on the Sheep Fever podcast. So anyone that wants to check out more about the Western Hunt Fest and learn more about that, go over to Sheep Fever podcast and listen to that. That's the last one that was dropped, I think, that Gray did that podcast on them. So yeah. Very cool. Kimmy, I know we're starting to get towards the end here, but before I let you go, and actually I'm going to throw this to Renee too, but we'll start with Kimmy. You guys are less than winners. So what, Kim, you're going to get your all this training, all this experience. What are you hunting this fall? And are you going on a sheep hunt?
I'm glad you asked me that, because my idea after this training is to put in for my very first time on a sheep hunt here in Wyoming. And
awesome.
Because I'm 56, I'm a woman, and it's my first time, I've got great chances to draw. So... but I better get in shape. So I'll start working out with Julie Tripp.
No doubt.
That stuff will kill you. I'm just saying that will kill you. Working out with Julie Tripp will kill you.
Right, be a great trainer. We'll probably put in for antelope again. We always put in for antelope and deer. And as I progress, I'm going to go like elk, and I am going to put in for a sheep if I feel like I'm physically fit for that. So yeah. Why not? You only live once. I'm going to do
honestly,
it.
Honestly, if you apply, you're going to get drawn, because there's sheep karma. And if that exists, you're getting drawn. I'll say that right now, that you've done so much for conservation and wild sheep over the years that you're definitely getting drawn.
It's
so
that law of attraction for me, right? I mean, it's just got to be. So, yeah.
Yeah. And how about you, Renee? You got any stone sheep hunts booked or anything like that?
Yeah, right. Well, not that I know of. I'll just say that. And I wish. That is my dream hunt. Whenever anybody asks me about my dream hunt, it's stone sheep, number one. But I do have some really exciting plans. I mean, here in Montana, we're lucky. As a resident, you know, I get my annual elk and deer tag. I've put in for antelope. I really love pronghorn hunting, and got drawn a couple years ago. So I'm hoping to get drawn again this fall for Montana pronghorn. I will not be able to get out for spring black bear, I don't think. I've looked at my calendar and it just looks too frantic, but hopefully maybe I can get out for bear this fall. I love bear hunting, as you know. And also really, really, really exciting on so many different levels. October, Gray and I celebrate our 5-year wedding anniversary, and we've booked a trip to Namibia. And with Aru, Deneen and Heisbert van der Wisthuizen's outfitting concession there. And what's really spectacular about this trip is that the African continent is going to be my 7th continent. I traveled to Antarctica in 2010, so I've actually had 6 continents since 2010, and I'm finally getting to the African continent, which is, you know, a major life milestone, fewer than fewer than 70,000 people visit Antarctica annually. So 70,000 into 8 billion people, it's an infinitesimal percentage of the population that goes there. So it's a small percentage that hits all seven. So I am first and foremost, above everything else on my life, I'm a travel bug. I love it. And so I'm super, super excited to be achieving this major, major accomplishment of hitting the seven continents by visiting Africa. And I am delighted to be going to Namibia with Aru, and Danine and Heisbert are friends. And they, I know it's going to be a fabulous trip. I don't know yet what I'm going to hunt, Kyle. We, because the way Danine and Heisbert structured the package for me, for us, is she said that they really want to highlight their beautiful country. And given that it's my seventh continent, we have a little bit of a focus on hunting. We're going to do about 4 or 5 days of hunting right at the beginning at two different lodges. And then the rest of the trip, they're going to be taking me all through Namibia to show me some of the remarkable features and places that they love. And so I'm really delighted with that. I can always book another hunting trip to Africa that's more hunting focused. But so I haven't, you know, we're just going to kind of play it by ear. When we show up, I'm going to just assess the situation and decide what to hunt on spot. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Well, Renee, it's your fifth anniversary, you know, with Gray. You're obviously the big five, clearly, right?
Like, right.
It's all Gray, I said that.
Yeah.
I'll be in his bad books. Well, that's really exciting. I'm very excited for both you ladies. That's fantastic. And I can't wait to hear about your falls. So with that, thank you both for coming on the podcast. You know, both of you for what you do for conservation. Obviously, Renee focused on women, but conservation. Kim, your years of dedication to the foundation and the things that really matter to me. So I'm just so grateful for you both. Before I let you go, Renee, can you just throw out there how people can apply for the Field to Fork program through Women Hunt, please?
You bet. Yeah. So, the website address is wildsheepfoundation.org/womenhunt, and women is plural, W-O-M-E-N. Or you just go to wildsheepfoundation.org and go under hunting at the top, drop-down menu shows up, and you click on Women Hunt. And when you go to that page, the application button to click to apply will be very visible right at the top on the right-hand side.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much. So deadline for that is the end of May. So people have the next 4 weeks to get their application in. And yeah, and it is competitive. So make sure you take the time to do the application, because a half-hearted approach is probably not going to work out very well for you.
No, you want to be descriptive and speak from the heart.
Right. Great. Ladies, thank you so much. Have a wonderful, wonderful week, and just appreciate all you do. And thanks again.
Thank you, Kyle. Thanks, Kyle. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Have a good one.